May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God. Amen. When you become a parent, or an aunt and an uncle, you suddenly see danger everywhere. Being a generation older, and at least we like to think wiser than our children, we have more life experience, which highlights for us just how much they don't know. We try to tell them, yes, but there's so much to cover, and because there's so much to cover, we know we run the risk of them tuning us out. So sometimes you have to be a bit more general. For our family, one overarching principle I try to drill into the kids is trust the locals. The locals can tell Hoosiers how to escape riptides in the ocean, or warn us to not eat too much of that pink watermelon snow on top of a mountain. They can tell us to take bear spray when hiking in Montana, or to watch out for nasty nettles in upstate New York. Now, an adjacent principle is trust the experts. A cement mason can alert you to how concrete can cause chemical burns. A metro worker can warn you of the dangers of touching the third rail. A janitor or a chemist can warn you not to mix ammonia and bleach. How do they know all these things? Because these dangers are relevant to their everyday survival. Trust the locals. Trust the experts. They see dangers you can't see. Now, I'm wondering if anybody here has an example of this that they would like to share with us, and I've invited a couple of our confirmands to grab our microphones and take them around, so don't disappoint these boys who are... I need a grant. One of my grants was going to help. They're over there, Caleb. Oh, man, they're leaving you hanging, Caleb. All right, Bethany, will you help him? No? All right, well, I don't see any hands up, so maybe we're all right. All right, we got a couple here. We got Joyce right here has one for us.
Don't put a fork to retrieve your stuck bread in the toaster.
That is a good one. Great. I saw a hand back here. Susie, did you have one?
Thank you. Some of you know we spent a number of summers, living on our boat, and we found very quickly that local knowledge when we went into different harbors was very helpful. It helped us elude rocks. We never hit anything because of the local knowledge.
Right. Great. Great.
So when I moved to Evansville, I started working at Berry Plastics. And I learned what plastics you can microwave and what plastics you cannot microwave. So number 5 on the package can be microwaved.
We all should make note of that one. That's a good one.
If you're listening to your GPS, Bokey Road does not exist.
When we travel, we always ask the locals, what's your favorite restaurant? Because I like to try restaurants that are local versus chain restaurants.
You're in danger if you are 6 feet or more ground. Be tied off.
Okay. Alcoa, all right. If you're 6 feet or more above the ground, you got to be tied off. All right.
In addition to not mixing bleach and ammonia, if you're mixing acid, do like your otter, add acid to water.
Can you say that again?
Do like your otter, add acid to water.
Anybody else? Thank you all. Oh, wait, we got one in the way back. No running in the sanctuary.
Doesn't matter where you finish, do your best.
All right. Oh.
Every mic is a hot mic. Nobody's going to like to hear this. Don't have the same password for everything.
Great. We got Jerry up here.
One of the things I remember my father telling me was never brag on your horse at the quarter pole. It took me a long time to figure out what that meant.
Never brag on your horse at the quarter pole?
Yes. Basically saying be careful what you start bragging about, because until the game's over, you better not brag.
The race isn't finished yet. All right. Good. Thank you all. Those were wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you, kids. Local or expert knowledge arises from experience with things that threaten that are unique to a particular location or situation. Local knowledge keeps the tourist safe. And even here in southern Indiana, where we don't have bears or ocean currents to contend with, there is local knowledge we share. For example, we know what to do when there's a tornado warning. We know that being a northeast or west sider is not a superfluous detail. And we know that no one should ever attempt to start a diet plan that first full week of October. Listen to the locals. Listen to the experts. They're the ones who know. We pick up in Mark's gospel today where we left off last week. You'll recall that in the first 20 verses of Mark, we learn that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, the one who can resist Satan, and the one who comes as the singular good news, or euangelion. He's also the one whose call, follow me, leads strangers to drop everything and come along. Our reading today takes place in the synagogue in Capernaum on the Sabbath. Jesus teaches those gathered, and the people notice that his teaching differs from that of the scribes. Jesus teaches with authority. Now, as one who preaches and teaches every week, I want to take up just a bit for the scribes here. An uncharitable read of Mark's description here is that the scribes were hacks whose teachings were shallow or misleading or something else harmful to the folks they taught. But let's be honest. Whether it's me, Billy Graham, Barbara Brown Taylor, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Amy Simple McPherson, or Fred Craddock, if any teacher is being compared to Jesus, their preaching is definitely going to fall short. Jesus clearly has the upper hand, which is part of what Mark's point is here. Jesus is the authority. He is the teacher. Of course, those who heard were struck by the discrepancy of authority between Jesus and their usual teachers. This contrast is one way Mark continues to reveal to the reader who Jesus is. Now, I'm done taking up for the scribes, because throughout Jesus' ministry, they will be a thorn in his side and ultimately will be partially responsible for his death. Now, notice that Mark doesn't tell us anything about the content of Jesus' teaching. The content isn't Mark's point. It's the authority of Jesus that he wants to highlight. Jesus' authority is impressive because it is unique. It comes directly from God because Jesus is the Son of God and God's Messiah, which you'll recall Mark tells us right off the bat in chapter 1, verse 1. Now, among those in the synagogue that day is a man with an unclean spirit. He cries out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." Notice that the voice is not that of the man himself, but rather that of the demon. Jesus rebukes the demon, "Be quiet and come out of him." And in another nod to Jesus' authority, the spirit leaves the man. Now, setting aside what questions or confusion we might have over demon possession and exorcisms, we mustn't miss how this exorcism highlights the extent of Jesus' authority. In the first century, there were others who performed exorcisms, and they had a procedure which typically involved special words, special objects, and calling on a higher power to drive the demon out. Notice that Jesus doesn't invoke any of these. His own words and his own power get the job done. No wonder they were all amazed. They say to one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." Notice the conflation of Jesus' teaching and actions here. What Jesus teaches is what Jesus does, and what Jesus does is what Jesus teaches. He perfectly walks the walk as he talks the talk, in other words. Now, as the reader, we should not be surprised that Jesus has such success with the demon, as he's already demonstrated that he can withstand the testing of Satan through his 40 days in the wilderness. But we may be surprised at how perceptive the demon is about Jesus' identity. As we said last week, it will take halfway through the gospel for Peter to confess Jesus as Messiah, and it will take until after Jesus' death for any human to name him as the Son of God. But here, the demon recognizes Jesus immediately. "I know who you are," it says, "the Holy One of God." Why are the demons able to identify Jesus accurately when the people are not? I wonder if it would help us to consider again the insight of local knowledge. The locals know dangers non-locals don't, right? Perhaps the reason the demons can peg Jesus' identity is because they are uniquely threatened by God's presence in their midst. Jesus is not a danger to those gathered for worship. Jesus is not a danger to the disciples. But Jesus, God's Son, is dangerous to the demon. "Have you come to destroy us?" Yes, Jesus has. And he demonstrates the authority to do so right there in the synagogue on the Sabbath day. "Be quiet and come out of him." I'm not sure many of us worry too much about being possessed by a demon here in the 21st century. But that doesn't mean there isn't serious evil that can take possession of us. We can become completely consumed by all kinds of evil, both as victims and self-inflicted. Think for a moment of the ways abuse, addiction, disease, greed, betrayal, oppression, ambition, fear, and violence can take possession of entire lives and even entire communities. Have you known someone possessed by addiction? Have you known someone possessed by the trauma of past abuse? We can think about how violence possesses entire communities and even countries. Evil may no longer look like demons, but we are vulnerable to evil like the man in the synagogue. And likewise, Jesus is still a danger to the evils of our day. We, of course, would never experience Jesus as a danger, because Jesus is not a danger to us any more than riptides or bears threaten us on a daily basis. But Jesus is a danger to the evils of our day, just as he was a danger to that demon in Mark 1. We know this is true. We have the local knowledge on this. Evils like greed, abuse, Oppression, violence, and betrayal can no more stand before Jesus than the demon could in the synagogue. These evils collapse when confronted with the goodness of Jesus. These evils collapse when confronted with the righteousness of Jesus' teaching. These evils collapse when confronted with the values of the kingdom Jesus brings. So, let us surrender the evils that possess us, our communities, and our world, to the one who has the authority to vanquish them with mere words. May these evils tremble in fear, because they are uniquely threatened by the one who gives us life, Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. Thanks be to God. Amen.